Welcome to the press conference. We're very proud to be able to host along with the Zimbabwean movement in New Zealand, Sekai Holland, who's as you know, is the leader of the Movement for Democratic Change, played a prominent role in international relations for the movement, which is the main opposition grouping in Zimbabwe, and was badly beaten up by Mugabe's thugs back in March alongside Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of the Movement for Democratic Change. Spent quite a while in hospital, is now
still getting treatment.
It was a very bad and brutal beating, and we're very pleased that she could, in those difficult circumstances, take time out to come to New Zealand to promote the cause for democracy in Zimbabwe, and perhaps give New Zealand a few ideas what we should be doing to give more assistance to the Zimbabwean people. So would that
thank you very much.
Introductory comments?
Yes, I just wanted to start by paying tribute to the Greens core leader, Rod Donald, who was a great supporter of democracy in Zimbabwe, and his death in the late 2005 was a great loss to us in Zimbabwe. I really would like to start by acknowledging that. We met last year, and we really did say some things. I'd like to thank you very much for putting this on for us, and to say that, of course, you know there are ongoing talks in Zimbabwe now. At our Congress last year, the Movement for Democratic Change Congress, which was our first Congress since our inauguration on September 11, 1999, we passed a resolution that elections on their own in the Zimbabwe context would not deliver change for the Zimbabwean people. So we adopted a new strategy which was in the context of our party's policy of zero violence. It was to mount a peaceful, democratic resistance campaign to force Mugabe to the negotiating table, for him to accept that he had failed and that what was required was free and fair elections on a playing field with international observers. Well, of course, the campaign was so successful that we were able to have, on March 11, a prayer meeting where, of course, our torture has led to the current talks, which SADC forced Mbeki to actually hold. So what are we doing now internationally? What are we saying? Five things. The first one, the Movement for Democratic Change is a political party. Our strategy was to get Mugabe to the negotiating table. We have, so that's a victory. So any talks where Mugabe is forced to a table, to us, it's a victory. Zimbabwe had a 16-year war. No Zimbabwean is going to go to another war for anything. We want to resolve conflict through dialogue, and we've got Mugabe talking. So we would like New Zealand, we would like everybody to support the Mbeki mediation very strongly. There's a condition. As I speak to you, another 64-year-old 2 weeks ago was beaten to death by the same squad that beat me up. As I talk to you now, our youth, our women's assembly are still being attacked violently. So the condition is this. We demand the international community to call on Mugabe to immediately stop the violence to allow the talks to succeed. Because we have our victory that we've got him to a negotiating table. So we have voted for Amendment 18 in Parliament, something that was odious to us. We voted last week. Now that we've done that, we want him to fulfill his part of the bargain, stop the violence. because you cannot have negotiations while you're beating the people out. The third thing we want to the world to acknowledge is that there really is need for free and fair elections in the year 2008, that this diaspora, you know that the conservative figure is that one third of Zimbabweans have been forced to emigrate. We would like in these elections for the Zimbabweans that are outside the country, including the ones that are here in New Zealand, we would like them to vote. In 1980, after Lancaster House, you did not need an ID, you did not need anything, you just needed to queue at a polling box to vote. That's not what we are asking for. We would like all Zimbabweans with their IDs to vote, wherever we are. The third thing is that we would like the United Nations to recognize the humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe, and that it is caused by bad governance, by Mugabe. Actually, we don't want to make much of this, but to our colleagues in Africa and in the black world, we want to say, we are nobody's puppet. What we are saying as Zimbabweans is that bad governance is bad for anybody, whatever their race. And we would like them in the United Nations to be responsible and accept that Mugabe has failed, whatever his history, he has failed. And that what Zimbabweans want now is peace. So we would like that UN recognition to actually take place now, because everybody knows that Zimbabweans are starving to death. The food is there. Mugabe has politicized it. And we don't care what people are thinking. People must eat. The fifth point here, and it's a very important one, is that we would like the United Nations to actually recognize now that there has to be reconstruction, and to actually start the process right now for after the free and fair elections, for again reconstruction for the people of Zimbabwe, not just for the few investors that we are supposed to invite back. It has to be reconstruction for Zimbabweans, because it's our second chance since 1980. This time we've got to do it right. So those are the points that we are hoping the world will take note of at every level. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have questions?
Prime Minister's going to be in Uganda soon. For Chogham, what would you like her to do there, or do you think, would you like her to take
I think that Howard has given direction to everybody. In Zimbabwe, the movement for democratic change works cross-party in every country outside Zimbabwe, because it's in our interest to get the policy concerns that we have carried out. So to us at the moment, Howard is the correct example of what should be done. At Chogham, I've described the things about the United Nations responsibilities. That is what we hope every head of state that we meet between now and Chogham to actually take forward. Whoever they are, particularly our African, Asian, Latin American colleagues, Mugabe has failed. Bad governance, as the Aboriginal community in Australia has kept saying since March 11, bad governance is bad governance, whether it's by a white person or by a black person. And we want the world for the first time to accept together that Mugabe has failed, and that the movement for democratic change is a natural development in Zimbabwe by blacks who are saying enough abuse is enough. So we would like the United Nations to recognize the humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe, which is caused by bad governance and abuse of human rights by one black person to other blacks. We would like this thing of the United Nations reconstruction process to begin now, because the humanitarian crisis because of the HIV pandemic, I think you've heard that in the last week, ministers of the Mugabe government have been stealing the ARVs and selling them in the black market, and that people who are the beneficiaries are sleeping at the doors of every hospital to actually get the ARVs before they are stolen out, and that people are dying in those queues. It's a disgusting situation which is indefensible. So in the face of the HIV pandemic, the Movement for Democratic Change has got a blueprint of the first 100 days that should be adopted now, that should be implemented for the benefit of the population in Zimbabwe. So that's what we would take as a message to the Prime Minister here. Talk to Howard and see what he is doing and do it.
Is any progress being made in the negotiations which President Mbeki is involved in? Because we're not seeing many media reports here recently.
I said that MDC's policy concern since 2006 was to get Mugabe to the negotiating table, because we've got our negotiating points very clear. The first negotiating point has not been observed by Mugabe. As I talk to you, our members, people suspected of supporting us, are being kidnapped from their homes, they are being beaten up, and they are being killed. So we are saying we support the Mbeki initiative advised by SADC or recommended by SADC, but if Mugabe continues to beat our people up, we are pulling out of the talks. You cannot be talking at a table while the house is being disrupted by somebody beating up your wife, your child, your grandmother. So we are saying we would like Mbeki to make sure that Mugabe stops the violence, because we have in Parliament voted for Amendment 18, which is odious to us, but we voted for it to show good intentions in the negotiations. So Mugabe must now stop the violence for the other things to proceed. What are those other things? Mugabe must disband the militias. He must professionalize the services of the police, of the army, back to barracks. The army is there. The Zimbabwe army is known for being excellent at peacekeeping. They should go back to peacekeeping within Zimbabwe. So we would like the laws which were amended to make worse after Smith. We would like those laws completely overhauled. Because after Smith, the laws were supposed to be overhauled, not to be made worse. So we would like the laws which are oppressing everybody in terms of removal of the freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of association. We want all that restored to back to the liberation agenda, which is the Movement for Democratic Change policy formulation. What else would we like to do? We would really like to have a clean voters' roll. You know that in most of our elections, people are being very upset. You go and you say, "This is my name," when you're voting. And they say, "No, your name is not there." Then you say, "Can I inspect the voters' roll?" You find that your dead husband, your dead son, your dead grandmother are all voting. Because the people who are voting are dead people, and people who are now in the diaspora. Mugabe has not cleaned up the voters' roll. So we want the voters' roll to be cleaned. The most important thing is that we want the international community to be involved in free and fair elections on an even playing field.
I think Peter might, you want to know what the schedule for talks is.
They are going on now.
There are talks going on currently.
Yes, but we are saying because of the violence, because of the violence, it's possible that they may not go on, because the violence has to stop.
They're taking place in South Africa.
They were taking place in South Africa. We are advised that they're taking place inside Zimbabwe. But also, even with the talks, the mediator cannot decide who the negotiators are. The parties that are negotiating select their own negotiators. So we have to have negotiations that are really transparent, that are really going to deliver. Because the Zimbabwean situation, the humanitarian crisis, is disgusting.
What happened to you at the prayer meeting? We know that you were subject to violence, but what actually happened to you?
Where?
At the meeting where you got
welcome. Okay. Actually, this is what I was going to say. I'm from the press. My training is in the media. and I taught journalism in Zimbabwe. We set up a new training school. I mean to say that because I know that the press really do understand when things are actually told to them. I'm still receiving therapy. And I really think that because the violence is still going on, I can only answer this in a certain context and not in another, right? The Democratic Republic campaign set up a structure within the Movement for Democratic Change. And it was well known that we were using the films of Mahatma Gandhi for the salt campaigns to get independence for India, and the Martin Luther King tapes, which were used by the African Americans to train people to face the American police, the American army, when they were being brutalized in the peaceful campaigns. Those training tools were used for 6 months right around the country to prepare for the launching of the Democratic Resistance campaign, which was called DRC. The party then put leaders from the National Executive Committee to be responsible for the provinces. We have 12. And I was responsible for Harare province. Harare is the biggest province with 16 districts. So of course, as a grandmother, and this being a tool which was going to deliver Mugabe to the negotiating table, we were the best organized. And we really were the best organized. The person who was actually doing the groundwork on my behalf as a technical person was Grace Quinje, who you saw with me. We were injured together, and they attempted to cut her ear off during torture. So when the Democratic Resistance Campaign was launched in terms of marching peacefully, Harare had the best marches, as you saw. So when the Save Zimbabwe campaign, the Save Zimbabwe campaign is a coalition of lots and lots of groups, about 36. Churches, women, youth, everybody's in that trade union. So when the Save Zimbabwe campaign had their turn to do an activity, peaceful activity, they called for a prayer meeting at Highfields. So all of us in good faith went to the prayer meeting because it was supposed to actually demonstrate to the government that at a prayer, everybody is united. So of course, that's the introduction I want to put, that when we got to the Young Men's Christian Movement, YMCA hostels where we were meeting, somebody texted us that the militia were coming. And of course, as human emotion would have it, most people ran away. But the ones who remained behind, we agreed that we were going to go to the prayer. And we did go to the prayer. Before we got there, somebody texted us that some of our colleagues were arrested. So we all agreed that we should drive to the police station and really just see what it was that was required. We thought it was just going to be an issue of bail. Pay the bail, put our colleagues in the car, and drive to the meeting. Instead, we were actually, our keys, I was with Dr. Maduku, the president of the NCA, National Constitutional Assembly. Our keys were taken. We were put into a pen inside the charge office. You know, you pass police stations and you don't know what's inside. We saw there was a pen, like a cake pen, in the middle of the police station, inside, out of view. We were all put there. I think there would have been about 60 of us. And we were told to lie down, which we did. They showed us where to lie down on our faces. And they started beating us up. And then I think they were preparing exactly how they were going to do it. We rang our president to say, you know, we've been arrested. And he was driving somewhere to the prayer meeting. So he also came to check what was happening. And of course, by the time he got there, 30 minutes later, the person in the charge office, who we are told was the head of the security, was calling the names of the leaders of the Democratic Resistance Campaign, one by one, to actually go into the charge office. I was really interested that they called our youngest first, our spokesperson, Nelson Chamisa. And when he came back, he indicated to us we would be tortured inside. Well, I was called last as the one responsible for Harare province. I was called last. And when I stood up to actually go in, I was faced with a team of five very strong men with shamboks. If you're a South African, you know what a shambok is. I don't know what they call it. It's a rhinoceros hide. And when they hit me first, I just said, what are you doing? Because they were kids. What are you doing? And of course, each one, I think, had a place on the body which they had to hit. And so they kept calling my name. I went into a corridor. There was another five. And then inside the church office, there was another five. So they told me, they were beating all the time, who called you here? So another person outside was calling my name. I think when you are confronted like that, you really are not thinking straight. Instead of standing in one place, I started going back again. So the five in the church office were beating my back, and the five in the corridor were beating my front. And as I went into the day, so they called me again inside. So I went in, so I had three of these. And then in the church office, of course, they made us sit down and beat us up there. And when they found that, they did tests on us. You can only see that now. They asked me to, if they broke my glasses and my bracelets and my watch, and they gave those to me. They were testing to see if I was still using my limbs. I said, yes, I want those. So they set me on a bench and called a young man with an iron bar and said, so she's still using it. So that's when they actually broke my arm, ribs, and broke my limbs, my leg. And I'm told I passed out. I don't remember that. I don't remember any of the beating. I don't remember any of the actual. So they asked me, how many grandchildren do you have? I said 11. And I realized I was delirious. And when I left, I was made to lie down again there. After 9 hours, they put us into big trucks and took us to different police stations. I was left at the one in Avondale, nearest my house. We were really frightened that we were going to be kidnapped there. We were not, because our lawyers, our families, our colleagues looked for us. On the Tuesday morning, this happened on Sunday, the militia came again and told us the story of how they told me I had jumped out of a truck. What happened was when we got to that station, I said I couldn't walk and they pushed me off the truck and I fell on my face. So when we now were picked up on Tuesday, it was lunchtime, to the central station, it was our lawyers who insisted on taking us to court. We were recorded. We went to court and all the diplomats came. I really want to pay tribute to all the diplomats in Harare, because they came to the courthouse and they formed a barricade because the militia came again and they were going to kidnap us there. But the diplomats who were there and refused to leave, I think people were using cell phones, because eventually the courthouse was full and people started to sing hymns, and we were not kidnapped. So we were then taken to the Avenues Clinic at 7 o'clock at night. And our president was told he could go for treatment, and he refused and said everybody who is in this room was tortured in the courthouse. So the ambulances, the trucks came and picked us up, and our president refused to leave until everybody had left. By 11 o'clock, when we were all coming out of reviews, he arrived to get his own review. And so I really want to pay tribute to him as well. But that's what happened. And of course, if you know the story of us trying to, our doctors said there was no equipment, there was no medication, and they wanted us to be taken internationally. And you know, when we were leaving, the government stopped us, and eventually, and that when we did get to South Africa, Mugabe tried to kidnap us in South Africa again for us to be taken back. And of course, eventually my husband, who is Australian, got me to Sydney, where I'm getting treatment now. Anyway, that's what happened.
Thank you. There seemed to be a little doubt in most New Zealanders' minds that our Prime Minister or our government would regard Mugabe's regime as having failed. What specifically could they do? What specifically would your message to Helen Clark be, our Prime Minister? What could she do to change the situation?
I want to say to you, New Zealanders, I was at Chogam in Kulam. I don't know which year that was.
2002.
I was with Peter there. Our Minister for Information, Professor Moyo, set up a press conference, and we were tipped by the press corps and we went. And of course, at the press conference, we put our case fair and square about how Mugabe had failed. And Helen Clark made one of the best statements about what the Commonwealth should do. I've never met her, but I was very impressed with her anxiety to get a united and coherent Commonwealth working together on a sensitive situation at that time. So she has been very good. Okay, what would we like her to do? We really would like her to understand our appreciation and thanks. New Zealand has the best immigration policy towards people in strife and towards refugees. And the way that they have dealt with that situation has been excellent. So we want to thank her for that. Judge Paraza, who is here, was the judge in my case. When he came to be the judge in my case, I knew it was a setup because I'm a controversial person, so is everyone in the MDC. Eventually they set him up if he made the correct decision. The case was never finished. Eventually they hounded him and he had to leave the country because they were going to kill him. Different countries were approached to facilitate his safety and his actually getting a safe place. Everybody did that. But no, not the New Zealanders. And I want a second thanks for that. Judge Ben Paraza is safe in New Zealand and he's really safe. And it's really good in our situation to find that we have our people who are safe. Thirdly, we have a representative of the Movement for Democratic Change operating in this country, and he has received the most cooperation from everybody. It would have been easy for Helen Clark to say, no, we don't believe what you're doing, shut the office. So I really would like to express that appreciation. In Shona and Ndebele, when somebody has done you a good turn, you say, thank you very much, please don't get tired. So I'd like to say that what we would like now are three things. The first one, the New Zealanders who are, the Zimbabweans who are here, who don't have their papers in order, can an asylum be declared again so that their papers are put in order so that they are eligible for training for the reconstruction. So when they go back to Zimbabwe, they really are going to be useful citizens in a very useful way. There is a precedent for this. This was done during the liberation struggle. People who were in different Western countries, different African countries, we went round and asked those governments to retrain them for the areas in which they would actually go back home. And so that's the first most important priority. But the second one, which is also even more important, is that right now as I'm talking to you, there are Zimbabweans in different African countries, different Asian countries, who have run away to tertiary education and who can't pay their fees in those countries. Maybe Chogam can actually have a scholarship fund again for Zimbabweans, wherever they are, to get training and to go back. I just want to put into context the deportation of the dependents of the children of Zimbabweans on the sanctions targeted list. The reason they were sent back from Australia back to Zimbabwe is because the parents were actually stealing money to send to Australia to educate their children there and leave the schools in Zimbabwe without any funding for the children in Zimbabwe to go to school. But the money was stolen, and once that criminality was established, Howard had no to just say go home. Right. Right now as we are talking, Mugabe has approached Rhodes University to take 60 students of the children of the people on the targeted list who are going to be sent from the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, the European countries. And Rhodes University has said this: we have a lot of Zimbabweans who are very brilliant, who are in our institution, who can't pay their fees. Can that money be used to educate the ones that are already here, the one you want used for the children, your children? Then give us additional funds so that your children can find places here. Now, if a South African government can try to enter such a bargain, I think it's really important for CHOGM to realize that there is a doable program where every country where there are Zimbabweans who are trying to put themselves through university can be supported. The third thing is that those people who have not got to that elitist situation, it is actually nonsense to say they can't be treated as refugees because they are people who have run away from economics and they are people who have not been able. There should be camps in every African country now recognized as camps of Zimbabweans where the international community has programs of retraining these people to go back home when Mugabe goes. And I think the humanitarian crisis inside Zimbabwe can only be stopped if the United Nations, that's the final point, agrees that the international community has a responsibility to go back into Zimbabwe and stop Mugabe in his tracks and start the reconstruction. That's how I would answer how we would talk to Helen Clark.
So we could push for higher aid contributions from the United Nations, the Commonwealth, for that reconstruction process and perhaps additional aid ourselves.
Yes, but start the training of people now because they are there in every country. There is no country right now where there are no Zimbabweans. We go to Japan. Japan is known as a very difficult country to get into. And somebody said, oh, we are having a function tonight with Zimbabweans. I expected white Zimbabweans. It was all black Zimbabweans. And the things they were doing there, I could not believe. They were married to Japanese, their kids there. This is men and women. There were Zimbabwean women married to Japanese men. I said, excuse me. I mean, we Zimbabweans are doing some cutting edge stuff. So those who are not in a position to do so can be empowered. Because believe me, I know this to be true. In 1980, this was proved to be true. I was doing my master's qualifier at the Newsweek in 1979. And my husband and I were in bed exhausted. Zimbabwe exhausts you about what we would do next because really Mugabe Smith was not going to go. And the BBC said. At Lancaster House yesterday, it was agreed that on the 18th of April, Prince Charles will be going to Zimbabwe. We didn't wait to hear the rest, which is ready to the shower to get ready to go home. Believe me, when people got up on the 18th of April, who were neighbors of Zimbabweans, wherever they were in the world, we had gone. We went home. And I never came back to Australia for 20 years to ask the Australian colleagues to set up a information center, which is where Peter works, does this work for us, the Zimbabwe Information Center. So I'm saying we want people to get training to go home. Nobody who is Zimbabwean intends to stay where they are. We come from the center of Africa, which is the best place in the world, we believe. So the help we want is for now when we are in trouble, because we are going home.
How long are you here for?
I've taken some time off from my therapy. I'm going back on
Friday
morning to catch my my therapy. It's 9 o'clock
so on Friday. Who have you spoken to so far, and who do you intend to speak?
We met the Maori Party. When we are traveling anywhere in the world, it's a policy for the past 30 years. To meet the indigenous people first, to say we are here, this is our business. And of course to the Maori Party, we were just acknowledging our presence here and explaining what our program is and asking them to support us on these 5 points.
And you're not meeting the Prime Minister while you're here?
Well, you know, the program has been made by my host, and my hosts, we don't know what they have on the plate. We're just going to take it as it comes. But it would be good for the message to her to be conveyed whether I meet her or not, because she is somebody we admire greatly. And we admire New Zealanders for electing a woman as Prime Minister. To us, it just gives us such a buzz. And so we know that the voters here are enlightened.
Well.
Thank you very much for a full explanation.
Thank you.
And thank you, John Sparazza.
So thank
Ben,
you very much.
Ben is the leader of the Save Zimbabwe campaign and doing great work across the country in support of Zimbabwe.